say that between fingers, between toes, and of course to wash the hair, you know, thoroughly comb the hair. And the Chevra Kaddisha is careful not to turn the body face down, because it would be a bizoyah. So what do? They put the body on the side, on one side, and wash them, and then they put them on the other side, and wash them all around. And then they keep the body in a position, in a vertical position of standing, because they have to hold on to it, to the body. And two or three people pour water on the body. Now, the Haredim, if you heard, the Satmara, they have a mikveh right there in the place. And they immerse the body in the mikveh. The Shulchan Aruch says, pertaining to, for example, Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur, particularly when everyone is supposed to go to mikveh, according to Psadi Goyim, we're even supposed to make a bracha, because Erev Yom Kippur is a kind of a gerus, you know, everyone becomes a renewed, new Jew, dedicated anew, and a gerus, you know, needs feeling. So the halacha is a shulchan aruch that if someone doesn't have a mikveh available, not everyone lives in New York and it's very far to go, so you could be yaitse with test kabim. Now test kabim, I think those are in my class. No, remember I just mentioned it last Friday. Ke'esaklet yogodu, which means that every akav has dalat lugin and a lug has vav beitim. Consequently, how many beitim does a akav have? 24 beitim. Now, if I say test kabim, 9 times 24, so that's, I believe, 216 beitim. Now, the question, of course, is how large a beitim is. So you take a, according to Medvi Yehudi, Machna, even if you take twice the size of an egg that we have today. So, and then the test kabim must be poured not by more than three people. In other words, by two or three. It's very heavy for one person to lift up a test kabim at once. Now, two or three, and the one, let's say the second one, has to start pouring the water before the first one starts. So the test kabim should be continuously without stop. Now, this is what we do Erev Yom Kippur, the living, and this is what the Tare, the Chevra Kaddisha, does to a body as the Tare. This is the main important aspect of Tare.
What is the purpose?
The purpose is that they go to the... it's wrapped in more in a great measure of mysticism. You see, we do believe in Chiyas HaMetim, but we don't have a clear picture as to what will constitute Chiyas HaMetim. Anyway, the cleanliness of the body and the wrapping the body, let's say, in Tachrichim and in a palace and a kittel, you know, all that is an emphasis on the belief of Chiyas HaMetim. That's why the cleanliness. In other words, you have the cynics who don't believe anything at all. As far as they are concerned, I mean, I heard of the type of a Jew who says, "Father, I can just flush me down the..." Now, this is, you know, the attitude that if a person has no respect for himself after death, rest assured that he has no respect for himself while he is alive either. Because when, for example, the Chazal want to emphasize the aspect of a novice, the person shouldn't be haughty, the person shouldn't be arrogant. So what do they say? They say, remember the ultimate end. Da mein Barcelona teholach, nem kein Offerim, Now, when a person knows that he comes to the Tikkun Serucha and he goes from Koyim Afararim of Israelia, he has nothing to be proud of. Now, if we take this literally, that this is the end of the body completely and totally, a total cessation, never to come back to life again in any form, in any shape, whatever, then naturally there is no reason why to bother with the body at all. Just throw it out like a carcass of an animal. We throw it out in the waste bank. We do believe in Chisa Mesim, and even though we have a very poor concept of what it is, but Yakitza, this is a Pesach in the near, Yakitza Sheikh Na'afra. And so that's based upon Chisa Mesim, or the other Pesachim in the Torah also, on Yom HaZachaya, Mechassim, and Yerpo, and so on. Oz Yoshe Moshe, remember probably Oz Shalonem, and Yoshe, Lover, and many others, yeah. So, again, go back to our discussion, yes? And the kind of what? Yes. Cremation definitely is against Aloha, because the Aloha demands Kvure. Kvure Bekarke. And it's necessary. Kovet Tikbarenu, Bayom Hahu. And by the way, there's a Hesus in Bayom Hahu. That's another aspect, yeah. Shemin? Maybe they use shemin to. It's possible, I don't know. We use mine chan. About oil? It's possible that they use oil. I know among the living there are some people who are sensitive to water, you know, they have a certain skin disease, and I forgot how it's called. And they can't wash with water, so they use various oils. Well, I don't know. But the main important, that's what I'm trying to say, the main aspect of Tara, as far as Mason goes, is either mikveh or the shvichas tes kavim, pouring the tes kavim of water over it. Yes. And? Most of it is minhagim. And I have certain sukkim, how to go about. Yeah, most of it is minhagim. Has different than Hagen. But the test carbon, this is a prerequisite. Yeah. Test carbon. What is it? Charis panemia, it depends how to what extent it should go. That's not too fair because, you know, sometimes you can get the inside out and that's like a little too much. You have to go to every crack and every part that's possible to reach, but not too far. Too far would be already a bizoin, I mean. Would get, like, let's say, why is Judaism very much opposed to what is a chanito, the modern chanito? Embalming. Because when they embalm, of course there are two aspects in embalming. One aspect in embalming is that they remove blood, and then in that place, they stab into the veins. They remove a great measure of blood, and in its place, they insert a certain fluid. Now, so there are two chesrenes. One chesron is to injure the body. That's called bezoin nivlamet, which is prohibited. And the second chesron is that the blood which is removed also leads. Every part of the body needs kvura. And what they do is just to let the blood down the drain. So these are the two chesrenes. Now the shayla is, what about Yankov Avinu, Yachna too also? So apparently we don't know the form which they used in ancient days. The fact is that the ancient pharaohs are still preserved to this very day. And modern science does not know this form of embalming. Tell a mystery to mama. They knew then more than what we know today. All right, now. Well, you must have a tara. As I say, tara is a chitamak. I mean, this is the proper way of tara formation.
And the purpose of this is what? Because we believe in this, or because we actually see the tara coming?
No, the tara is not. That's right, of course. This is not. Tara here really doesn't mean tara to remove tumma. That's out of the question, because the message is a via vosa tumma. So that's out of the question. Only think tara here means really the literal, more mystic. If you apply to it to remove clipping, shading, whatever it is, but primarily is to clean, cleanliness, then of course in the cleanliness you might argue, wouldn't it be better to put the body in a tub and clean it? Well, that's probably they might use even a tub to clean the body, but then you should also pour the test carbon over it in order to abide by the mystic aspect of that. Of course, in halacha, see that the shaila is, suppose the person was buried and he wasn't, that was without that. Shall he be unearthed, shall he exhumed? And there are certain things that are miyakim. Tara says it's not miyakim, because after all, it doesn't say, in the original sources. So it is more mystical than halacha. That's why we will not exhume a body for that purpose. Now, there are various customs. The customs, for example, after they clean the body, after the body is dressed, they mix an egg, raw egg, with a shell, mixed in with wine, they pour in a little, all mixed in, and they rub it into the hair. For example, a minig, they call it gepalach. Gepalach, little pieces of wood into the fingers, So the Chochmah Sodom, if you'll take a look, Chochmah Sodom in the back has a special kuntres on Taras Mesim and the preparation, at the end of Hevas Avelis. So he is very much opposed to the gepalach. Says it's all superstition. Bachtan Sefer, however, took issue with him. And he showed a Yerushalmi, where a Safra said that when they will bury him, he left word they should give him the staff. Why the staff? That when Mashiach comes, he shall go to meet. There you have again the same theme, repeated again. The going to meet Mashiach, the belief in him, and his formation, and it's all re-emphasized over and over again. So the Chacham Sofer sanctions this minute. Then there are minhagim, how to put on the tachrichim after the tachrichim should be made of linen, of tishma. Originally they used to dress the body with expensive clothes, as Reformed Jews do today. And then Rav Gamliel, you remember that mission in my partner's famous event which took place in the history. Because a lot of people, they were poor, they couldn't afford to get nice, beautiful clothes. They would leave the body and run away from the community. Finally, Gamliel demonstrated, and Gamliel could afford it, but he demonstrated that it's not necessary, and he took pishtam. They did the pishtam. That's from Lenin. Now, mystics already attributed importance to Mishnah. For example, today we have cotton. Cotton is even cheaper than linen. Linen is very expensive. No. What is
it? Thick linen.
Thick linen. I wonder if it is linen. It's probably maybe it's cotton. I don't know. Well, anyway, the Kabbalah, it should be dafki. Dafki to dig the pishta. And now, during the First World War, there were, of course, communities that couldn't afford to get linen. It was costly. They were very poor in Europe, and every now and then there was a plague also, typhus and others, and they had to immediately. There was a shaila, we have found it in the Chuvas yet, but it's permissible to make tachrichim out of paper. That's exactly what they did. They couldn't afford to big the bishop. Now it has come today in this in New York, for example. If you want linen, they charge you, an arm and a leg. They put a tariff on in general, comes to that aspect, the capitalize on it.
Well,
a pikabole, it should be pishtan. A pikabole should be pishtan. And then there's a shaila about afterwards, you have to put on a man, you put on a talit. And if he was one who wore a kittel, you put on the kittel too. The wore the kittel and then the talit. And it says, what kind of a talit? The knight's a talit. And you don't take off the atorah, do it with the atorah. All for the same reason. Going to meet Mashiach. Yes? They should take off one of the stitches. They make possible. But the stitches is very interesting. It goes way back. We find among the Balatotis that one of the Balatotis, if I'm not mistaken, was the Bechoshor or his son, the Bavron. Either Abyeisi Bechoshor or the Bavron, his son, who left word that when he dies, they should not take off any stitches from. Why did they take off one of the four stitches? Because by making chotz, once a person is made, then it's chotz in a mitzvah. Consequently, they make the talis possible. If it was from the Mashiach. But then you'll have to go and run and look for another stitches to add on in order to make it kosher. Exactly, that was the reason why he left word they should not take off the tzitzit. For this very reason. And I don't know what happened at that time, but there's a story which the Oruch HaShulchan brings in when it comes to that point, you know, about he quotes the story about the Vilna Gaon. Now the Oruch HaShulchan is, after all, a Shia Halacha, it doesn't bring any story. When it comes to this, he does say this story. The Vilna Gaon also left word that when he dies, they should not pass through the tzitzit. Now, he left word with one or two Talmidim, you know, towards the very end, not a part of his life. Not everyone knew it. When it came to be Mitahem, you know, those Talmidim were not at hand, so they didn't remember for the time being. Anyway, the Hevra Kaddisha did the regular procedure, you know, and they did pass the talis, and they buried him, and after they filled the grave. The Talmidim, those two Talmidim reminded themselves. They remembered that the Vilna Gaon was makpid after they should give. So there was a shaila whether they should have zoomed about it. And the other Rabbonim there at the time issued a psak that this demonstrates that the Minik is well turned. The Minik is the Pasul HaTzitzit, and that's it. All right. Listen, we could go on, but this is really not the primary objective of this lecture. I mean, he asked me to tell you in brief as to about Tara of Mason. And in our course, we naturally dwell a great deal on Avelis, every aspect of Avelis. So when we come to it, I will omit this particular part and we'll discuss the other aspects of Avelis in detail. All right, now we have Gittin and Khalid. I did bring a shoe, a chalitza shoe. How many of you ever saw a chalitza? Only you saw. Yeah. Anyone else? That's all? No one else? Well, yeah. I can't hear you. That carbon, we just measured it to be about 216 eggs. A borderland. 216 eggs. Now you have to measure how much an egg is. Did we in our class when we discussed Mikvoyah, did we come to some decision as to the measurement of an egg?
No.
We only went as far as we saw. Now go and saw. I suppose if you have a good mathematician who is very quick at it, perhaps you could be go down. Well, you know, I gave you the similar extra place you go to. Perhaps you can. How many gallons did he say? He said about 195 gallons. That's the largest size, 192 gallons. The largest size. But we have no clue. No salt. Yeah. No, there isn't. Oh. No. But you know it. A lot of salt. Well, let's see. If 40 salt is 192 gallons. Now, I'll soon give it to you. It's Ephrat Lake. Go do. Now, Asor is Vav Kavin. Six Kavin. Akav, I told you, is 216 eggs. So, 6 times 216. Now, that multiplied by 40, and that will be 192 gallons. Now, reduce that to a 1. All right, now 6 times 216 is how much? 6 times 216. Right. I have 1296. You had that. 1296, you figured it out. Thank you very much. 1296 times 40. Now, 1296 is 1296 eggs is in one saw. Now, our boim saw is 40 times that much. Now, and then reduce, that will be 192 gallons. Now, if you will go down to 140th of 192 gallons, you'll know, not 140, what did I say? You'll have a tremendous amount. What is 140th of, let's see, 1296 is 140th of 192 gallons. But this is the way you are going to go. I mean, do it yourself, and you'll arrive at the exact measurement of the egg. Okay? Let's not waste any more time. Okay. Yes? Taras Hamesim is not Midaraita. We don't have it, no. For the Kvure. How can there be Mita? I want you to know, please, I want to call your attention. I mean, the trouble is, you know, when we went to Cheder, Hebrew school, or even to today, you take a translation. Toha, Tome, they say clean, unclean, and these are misnomers. These are not true interpretations. Because, you see, Noki means clean. Meluchlach means unclean. But Toim Tome means these are concepts purely, I think, Ruchnius. You might call it perhaps a taboo, I don't know, whatever it is. But it has it's a different connotation altogether. You can go in, for example, today in a funeral parlor, and it's clean. And you can go in a mikveh. But this is Tare and this is Tare. What can it be? We are all to Mayor Mason. They just go home and they take a bath and they're clean. But as far as the Tume, we are all to Mayor Mason. We go in into our funeral parlor, we are to Tume Mason. Oh, these adjustments, hugging, which say that of. It has to do with mysticism, that's all. And if you will ascribe to it, maybe it has even. I mean, sometimes I have a feeling that they have it's superstition. I just don't know. But at least as long as the Ramah quotes them in Hagim, that's all. The Ramah says claims the minik Yisrael Torah. So it's a that's all. It's a minute. It's sanctioned by custom. But that's all. Certainly not a law. We are not washing our hands. We will not make a stir. Never. And that's why today, I don't know how many of you were in Israel, or who certainly will go to Israel. We be careful when you go up to the coastal here. There are certain ways you're not allowed to go too far, because we are Tamei and Mason, and when we go there a little further, then it's via Zahi of Korek. In order to be Torah, we have to have Porat Dumin. You know, it's today we don't have it. That's all. All right, now let's go back to, I might say parenthetically, you probably, a good many of you here are Kohanim. How many Kohanim do we have here? Oh, you have an, do you know that you are not allowed to go, even when you go on the street, let alone to go into a funeral parlor? You have to be careful when there's the awning, you know? They usually have that. Extending. Not allowed to go underneath. Of course, in our class, we'll dwell a great deal on that. Tuma Yoita. A sidola tape that makes the entire place unclean. Yes. Well, that's it then. In other words, well, but there are in between. Don't you have them? Yeah. Yeah, on both sides. You mean, and the trees cover both Masavis, Kvarim, and the highway? Yeah. Well, I remember someone did raise the problem in Brooklyn. There is a train that goes over the Kvarim. I know there's a certain train that goes over Kvarim in a Jewish cemetery. It's a very serious matter. It's okay. You see, the question is this. The question is, plane also. The question is, I'll tell you, if you are in a plane or even if you are in a train, if it's all closed up, you know, then there's no, it has to be per se a tefach in order for the tumor to go in. But let's say summertime, the windows are open. And you must have, of course, a little extended little roof over the window, let's say, there's an extension. If it's a tefach extension, and the tumah is because the ole ad l'rakia, so it goes from the roof, it goes through the open window into the room. I, for example, I remember I got a call from a kohen. He lives in an apartment house, and he was just informed that in another apartment someone died. So he wanted to know what to do. So I told him, he asked first of all to close the windows, that it was summertime, you know, you have to close the windows that go to the outside because there is, you know, a little tefach certainly extended on top of the roof. So he might, so through the open windows, you know, that would come in, the tumor. First of all, I want you to know that aloha is that every minute that a coin stands in it is a oiva alam. That it says a coin is over every minute. That's why a coin must go out of a house even with his underwear. It's a chokhmah ben eitzim ben tivuna neger Hashem. There's no, you must immediately leave. But this is another place. This is, he is in the house. So, but there was, in a, you see, in his apartment, he's not allowed to go out into the hall because the maids will be taken out through the hall. So the maids is tumah sidol seitz. Therefore, we consider as if the tumah is already in the hall. Consequently, what he has to do is close up his apartment so there should not be pesach tefer, the tumah shouldn't come in. And if someone rings the bell and wants to come in, I told him he must go in into an inner room, close the door, and let his wife or his daughter answer the outside door. Until the mace is removed from the premises. So, I mean, there are a lot of alochas which Kohanim have to be careful. All right, now, suppose we go over now to chalitza. I take chalitza because it takes less time. I hope you remember the chumash, the parsha chumash in the third. Since my book came in, I think I could tell you a nice, interesting story that has to do with chalitza. You heard it in the afternoon, but they didn't hear. But since you're here, you just reminded me, and I'd like to have the story shared with everyone here. My book was asked to officiate this coming Sunday at the wedding of a couple, an elderly couple. So he called me in the office and asked, he felt there's a shayla. And the shayla was that the woman lost her husband back in Hungary. And And, well, first of all, there's a problem of aguna, you know. How do we know? How definite is it? So, they came over to the office, and I discussed it with my business, you know. As far as she, her husband is concerned, she got a report from two men, Jews, who were together with her husband in the place where they all worked, you know, slaves in a slave camp, slave labor camp. And they testified that he died, they saw him even being buried, and so there was no question as far as the death of her husband, so there was no HCC. But when they asked her if she had any children, she said no. And her husband, who had been an alman when he married her, had no children from his first wife. Consequently, there was need of chalitza. So we asked her if he left any brothers. So she told me at that time, yesterday, while she was in my office, she said he had a brother who was with him in the camp. And according to the testimony of these two men, they were the only two plus another third man who came out alive. All others perished. 90-some odd Jews perished in the camp. Some died naturally, others were killed. And I was ready, of course I discussed it with, as I said, by phone with the other Rav, and then we decided we have to issue an official heter. You know. So we asked her to come in again today, and I had Rav here in my office. I was there. And we already had gone over all the aspects of Aloha, we were ready to give a heter. But as we were discussing this problem, as this came out, there was a third brother in Poland, because her husband had been from Poland, and he went to Hungary too. And so that created a new problem altogether. It created a problem whether the man that born in Poland, we have no way of knowing whether he was alive when the war broke out. Did he escape Poland? When Germany and Russia divided up Poland, you know, among themselves, but between the two of them, which part did it belong to? Even if it belonged to Russia, what happened to him? You know, a good many perished on the way to Siberia. There are many questions, and as a result, he consulted Reb Moshe, and Reb Moshe also was not ready to hand down a decision. Moshe Feinstein. So meanwhile, it's pending. We probably will find somehow, we hope so. Meanwhile, he's out of a hope, is that it? For the time being, we hope that the Moshe will clear it and we'll get an answer. Alright, now to go back to our Inyan of Chalitza. In the Chumash it says that if a man dies without issue, without children, then his brother has to either marry the woman or give a Chalitza. Today we don't have these two alternatives. We just did away with Yibum altogether. Today we only have Chalitza. There was a case, I don't know myself the details, but I surmised from the story what it must have been. That is, a din, in order to give chalitza, he has to say, she has to say, and if he is not, he's not too clear, he can't say it, for example, then there cannot be any chalitza. So in that case, they decided they should get married. In other words, he was sane enough to give a get. But he wasn't the Yoma Viyomro. There's a din of the Yoma, he has to say, she has to say, and that was a chisodin there in that particular part. So in other words, he had enough sense to give her a get, but not enough ability to perform chalitza. And that's why the Chachor, the rabbinate, issued the decree that they should marry and overnight, and the following day he gave her a get. It was a story which wasn't too clear, and of course the anti-religionists used it to a great extent to discredit. The reason they abolished Yibum, we have it already in the Gemara, the Sholeima. You see, the after all, you know, Eish Yitzchak is one of the Arayim. Correct. So Eish Yitzchak is the one and only exception. Because all arayas, once that a person is an erevin, becomes an erevin, then for the rest of your life, she's awesome. Even if the relationship, because of which the erevin was created, is dissolved, nevertheless, that person, once an erevin, always an erevin. There are two exceptions. One exception is the achis ishto, where the Torah says only bechayeho, meaning if his wife is alive, even if she's not his wife anymore, he may have divorced her, but as long as she's living, he's not allowed to marry his sister-in-law, that's her sister, but as soon as she dies, he's allowed to marry her. The Torah stipulates clearly bechayeho, so we have no question. Now, eshesach, we have the exception where there is no children that the brother should marry eshesach. Yibu. So Abishol claims that if the man doesn't mean the mitzvah of Yibum, he only loves her, she's beautiful, she's attractive, then he is pogeya, is pogim be'isa eshesach. So, especially in the days that we live today, we hear of so many triangles. You know, when a couple gets married, they're usually visited by the bride's sisters, by the woman's sisters, and by the man's brothers, if they're single, you know. And that's why today, if you would allow, for example, Yibum, you could never be sure that something shouldn't happen, you know. If the brother-in-law should fall in love with his sister-in-law. And I want you to know, today, for example, we have the problem of mamzerus. You know, we have problems, children are born out of wedlock. Now, the mere fact they're born out of wedlock doesn't make it, you know, doesn't put the stigma of mamzerus on the child. But it depends who fathered the child. Now, if the child, we ask the Feresh, this is one of the stipulated questions we should ask, because today it is so prevalent that if a girl gives birth to a child, does she have a married sister? Very likely today, it happens to be so often today, that a brother-in-law impregnates a sister-in-law. And that's very unfortunate, but this happens quite often. So anyway, to go back to the Yibum, we did away with Yibum. I mean, there's ample reason. And all we do, naturally, if there would be no alternative, we cannot be oikia government atere. But since the Tere gives us the two alternatives, so we prefer the other alternative, and that's Khalid. Definitely. Yibam and Khalid, as a matter of fact, we tell them you should have this kavone, that because of this, she is permissible to remarry. I mean, there must be kavone. And even this is what Abishol claims. If there's no kavanah to do the mitzvah, and he does it for self-satisfaction, then for example, if you put on tefillah. So then even if you don't have the kavanah, which has mindset to do the mitzvah, you don't say l'shem yichud, and you don't even say a bracha. Suppose his bracha is not miyakif. See? All right, so that's Mrs. Enitzich. By the way, I want you to know that the machloikin, and we are machmas shulchanah. The machloikin is the Mrs. Tzrichas Kavanah or Enitzichas Kavanah. And we maintain that there's a chumre. But when a mitzvah is involved in an avera, like we have, for example, our inyan of let's say, mitzvah slav lehonis mitzvah. We have a din mitzvah slav lehonis mitzvah. Now, if, for example, there is a isur, on the one hand, let me give you this example. A man would do a neder, a shvue, in a way that it should be chal, he shouldn't have anything to do with his wife. Now, there's a mitzvah here, mitzvah tzono. So you'll say, Ran Shevachain, there's a mitzvah, mitzvah slav lehonis nitna. Mitzvah slav lehonis nitna is the pshat. If, for example, he did a neder, he did a shvue, let's say, not to have a noe from leather. Now, tefillin is made out of leather. So I'll say, you put on the tefillin because mitzvah slav lehonis nitna. What's the pshat? What hanoi is there to put on the leather on that? There's no hanoi. So the only thing is you want to attribute this to the Asiya Samitzvah, you want to consider this hanoi. So the Chachomim maintain doing a mitzvah doesn't constitute hanoi. But whatever there is hanoi inevitably connected with Asiya Samitzvah, you can't say mitzvah slav lahonet mitzvah. He has hanoi anyway, besides the mitzvah. And the same goes for the kavone in Yibum too. You'll say there's no need of kavone. No need of kavone, then he is over ala aisa koris, eshesach. And I want to say something else to you. Yeah, that's another aspect which we'll discuss.
Even though we say shatma,
this is what Abishol claims. Apparently the Rabbonim differ with him and they hold like you say. Disregarding his other kavanas, whatever he may have. But we follow Abishol's opinion, particularly nowadays when we realize that if and when a man will consent to marry his sister-in-law, it's not because of the mitzvah, but rather because he loves her. And to love a nerv is an nerv.
Yeah.
As far as the reason is concerned, we discussed last Friday in the class that there is a misunderstanding in Pshat and Pos. Does not mean that a child should be named for the deceased. It has to do with Yerusha, the oldest brother who marries the woman. He is the one who inherits the. So the Torah doesn't say about the. We only get it from the general idea, because only in case he has no children, this law is applicable. So we get the idea that it is because of children, the lack of children. This is what Abishol claims, and this is what we follow today. You have an argument, and that's what the Rabbonim differ with Abishol. Nevertheless, we are cautious of the show. Well, anyway, it says we have to have three dayonim a minimum, but we have two additional dayonim who are they call them the stumme dayonim, because they are not to utter a sound, just to add dignity to the. In other words, it's not just an ordinary bezin of three; it's a bezin of five. You know, but in reality, three is what is required. Now, in other words, the other two we do it le persume, thinking about honey. Why is piersum so important in connection with chalitza? Because they're also yivim to hashara, says hashara in public. So therefore, and that's why when we had here last 2 years, we had about two or three chalitzas in the course of the last 2-3 years. And I had it up here, and it was medish right here. And it's preferable to have it here because it's the also yivim to hashara. It's going up. It says so. It should be on a high place, you know. It says so. On that basis. Now, so in other words, the element of pirsum is emphasized in the posuk. It's implied. Now, what we do is from the word hashara, we also learn that there should be a kviyas mokim. They should know when the chalitza does take place. The mokim is already dedicated. So that's why the five dayonim meet the day before, usually between Mincha Maariv, and they sit down, they arrange the table and the chairs the way it should be set up for the following morning, and they sit down and they say, we'll kaveya mokim, tomorrow morning we will have the chalitza here. And this is what they do, this is kviyas mokim. Now, there is need, as in Gittin, same as in Chalitze, we have to have clear identification that the deceased husband and the brother-in-law, that they know, Adam know, that, that he never had any children, and this is a brother-in-law, in other words, brothers of the same father. Important element, they should have one father in common, not necessarily the mother, but the father. And it must be, of course, 3 months, not before 3 months, because perhaps she may be pregnant, you know, and in that case there's no din of chalitza altogether, so we have to wait 3 months. Naturally, there must be gedolim, and that famous case also from Yerushalayim where an 8-year-old boy was involved. He had to wait 5 years until he would become a godel to give a chalitza. Remember that story? It also made the headlines, and the anti-religionists capitalized a great deal on that. But these are the halachas. These are the halachas. Now, what is the procedure? Of course, it says the procedure in Chumash. And by the way, whatever it says in Chumash, she says, La yava yabmi, you know, and he says, La chafat delikachto, it says the psukim. And because of the word kocho, kocho yosef, the Chazal learned that everything has to be said, the Shona Kodesh, has to be said in the same, as it is in Chumash. And what is the procedure you have, as I said, you have with the chumash? The man puts on, we make him wash his foot, his leg. I tell him, as a matter of fact, to do it in the morning before he comes to, wouldn't bother him to do it in public. I also tell him to cut the toenails, should be no chatzitza, you know. And then he removes his shoes, his right one, and that is his right one if he is a right footer. If he kicks, like if he plays ball, football, he kicks with his right leg. We make him, I want you to know, we ask him, kick something, you know, and we watch him, what foot he uses. We want to make sure that he is a right footer. Otherwise, he has to put, the nail has to be on the other foot. Alright. Well, this was made kind of neutral that we can use it on either one. But we already had a yovan that had a larger foot than this one. We had a trouble. It's very difficult to put it on. And at that time, he did finally put it on. At that time, we decided we are going to have another shoe, a larger one. And yet we have done. This is a difficult, as I said, we finally made this one. Now, this one, I don't know how many, did anyone learn Yevamos ever? No one? I learned here Yevamos 2 years ago, Rob learned Yevamos. Now, you see, the shoe consists of two parts. It consists, of course, of the sole, and then in this part. This is called panta. This is called akif, particularly for this part, and it's called panta, peinun tofal. Then, in addition, when it's put on, you know, it's buttoned up. And these buttons, you know, are called chumarta. And the Gemara calls it chumarta. And these are luloyes, you know, and they are buttoned up, the three of them. And then we have these two white ones, long ones, that go around his, you know, the bottom of his foot. And you see here in the back, they crisscross and they both touch the foot, you know, directly. On this side, in the back, and on the front, because it doesn't close up. So once, twice, and then on top they are two. And then they make a niva, and then she unbuttons it with one hand, and then she removes it, throws it away. The Yorkov before not means in his presence, not in his face. I say it because only two. What did you say? Saliva, that's a good shaila. Rok hanira leonayim. We tell the woman, by the way, not to eat, nor even to wash her teeth, not to, to clean her teeth that morning, not to have any water at all. The reason for it is that the rok shall be a natural rok. It shouldn't be the rok that comes from other sources, from other... Now, and that's why we usually make it early in the morning, so they shouldn't have to fast, you know, too much, too great a part of the day, yeah? No, the Gemara has like that. The Gemara has a whole discussion about manel and about sandal, and this is a combination of manel and sandal. We finally arrived at this conclusion. There were differences of opinion. The Gemara, we have quite a number of differences of opinion. What? No, I'm shat and posik and aloha kamosh mesina and so on. So this is a combination takes in all the differences of opinion. Yep. Can't hear you. Yeah, well, but one hand, with her left hand, let's say, she picks up his foot from the ground. You know, he's standing. And of course he leans so that he can put stand on one, on the left foot, let's say. And she, with one hand, she lifts up, holds his foot, and with the other hand, she unbuttons it, removes the shoe, throws it away. And then there's Yeriko, and then there is the Kiko, and then there, and of course the Psuke. The Kiko means to spit, you know. Now, why did I say Yorke Befono? I'll tell you, this is 3 weeks old, this story. One of our Haverim calls me up about a case, a young woman, she's remarried, she lost her husband in Vietnam. But there is a younger brother. A student. No, I tell him, of course, listen, if he perish without children, naturally, I need a colleague. All right, I should make arrangements the following day. It's already over a year, beyond the 3 months. The following day, he was even ashamed to tell me the story. And I had to get the story. He only called in. He thanked me for the bother. He bothered me. And left word that nothing came of it. I afterwards found out he took it upon himself to explain this young lady the procedure. And he explained the Yorke before us in his face. Naturally, if you want nothing to do with it. And this is how the whole thing. It all depends how you explain the matter. All right. Now, yeah. Well, this ritual is a little difficult to convince, I'll tell you. It's not a question. See, today we have several setbacks. Most people never heard of this halach. It's unfortunate. It's I did not tell it, and I didn't hear of it. I don't know. What is that? Yeah, well, usually I tell them even when. I can't hear you. I tell them, I even ask them if they know how to read Hebrew, they should practice up on the Psukim, because they have to say it in Hebrew. And, well, I want you to know that this is one of the procedures we cannot explain, because once you start explaining, you only make it, it has no, you can't give it any rational explanation. I try, instead of giving them a rational explanation, this goes, by the way, it's a very old, we find that the din of Yibam anyway, not Chalitza, but Yibam precedes Matan Torah. We find it, yes, in the case of, you know, Yehuda, with Thomas, it's a very old halacha. Now, the only thing is I tell them this is of the laws. If I have to explain it to them, I usually use the laws of nature, because science, everyone today parades with science. Science is a wonderful thing, you know. But no scientist will tell you why. Every science will only tell you how. And no scientist will tell you, for example, all of the wonderful advances made in science. Not one scientist has yet broken a law of nature. Fire still goes up, water still goes down, water quenches fire. You know, these fundamental laws of nature are immutable. Consequently, the laws of God are also mutable. It's the same by Shefer. Now, it all depends upon Amunah. See, now I have to go through with Amunah. I cannot give him any rational explanation. And I'd rather choose this, I choose the straight forward. This is really the only way of it. Well, what can we do? We can't. In other words, if someone really refuses to cooperate, we have no way of convincing. I want you to know, I'll give you this example. On one occasion, I had some kind of a lecture, and I happened to discuss Klein, shatness, linen and wool. And they jumped on me. They never heard of it. Never heard of it. Non-shatness. There is a label on none of now, at least you hear of it. But in some areas, they never heard of it. Why? What's wrong with it? So I asked him, could you tell me about basar b'chalav, milk and meat? Ah, that's different. It's not any different. You know why basar b'chalav is different? Because most of these people come from homes, at least at back in their parental homes. They observed kashrus, and meat and milk were not mixed. We have today to a point where people are not observant in kashrus, They'll eat trefe meat, but they won't drink milk with it. We have this kind. It went into their psychology. That they understand, but semer fish them, they can't understand. Why is there any difference? It's the same rationale. Everything goes back to halacha. We don't know the laws of nature, and we don't know why fire goes up and water goes down, and we won't know why basar b'chalav should be yours. We don't. I want you to know this is one area where the Rambam failed miserably. Tama mitzvah, he failed miserably. He made an attempt, and the Ramban already counteracted him, and we know today that his time on this are not reasonable enough for us to abide by these laws. There's no bracha for chalitze because they have a good shaila. The shaila about chalitze, see, the machlokes are showing you whether yibum is a mitzvah and chalitze is just an alternative, or is chalitze in itself a mitzvah. And it seems because of the topic, it seems chalitze is only a heter to be a mateher lashu. I would say this much. I would say, again, I have to resort to mysticism. According to mysticism, chalitze is an important aspect in itself for the sake of the deceased. So much so, suppose a woman doesn't intend ever to remarry, why should she go through chalitze? From the mystic viewpoint, it's important in behalf of the deceased, the neshama of nifta. Now, as I said, it's only a Kabbalah. Pinigle, we don't know. Pinigle, yes?
Why can't
you
speak
all the
Wouldn't
it
make more sense
than anything else?
What
kind of mystic? This is purely a mystic concept. And personally, I'll tell you why. Because I myself, I don't go for it. I can't tell them, but I'm not very convinced of it.
They'll come to say yes, but maybe they will listen to such a reason.
Children come. We use it, but I can't emphasize it. We have two questions. Yes. And Yib, according to that, there would be a bracha on Yib. A bracha on mitzvah, such as Gitzon Mitzvah, Gitzon on mitzvah, Yib. Well, that you ask another shaila. There is a bracha stock eggs. By the first deal, which we don't say. It seems that in the days of the Geonim, they had a special bracha the first night, Kosim Kalvi, the first night they spent together. Sheva bracha is something else. But before the Bia, mitzvah, like a mitzvah, like a bracha is a mitzvah. Yes? Doesn't matter. So what happens if it's a boy? What difference does it make? No.
Just a second. You see, we have here a repetition of what happened last Friday. I mean, those who were in the class, remember, the same thing. Why is it, what's the difference between a boy and a girl? I mean, apparently, you're bothered if the first... Please. You ask what happens if the first child is a girl. So why should it be different if the child is a boy? What's the... Why? Oh, that's exactly what I do. This is what bothers him. And you apparently didn't hear that I mentioned, I made the reference before to the posik that the poshet of shat is definitely out. In other words, what you had in mind that the first child has to be named for the deceased, that's not the pshat. The Chazal, this is one, by the way, one very rare exception where the Chazal have poshet taking out the pshat of poshet. And as one of our students remarked, Mr. Shapiro remarked, in the name of whom? Who is that? Chaim Biberfeld. That's really, if you look into the pshat of poshet, you see that even the pshat is not that way. Because if the pshat would be that the firstborn child should be named for the deceased, it should be Yochum al Shem Dodo, not al Shem Ochen. It says al Shem Ochen. So that's so such a wonderful haore that I'm so appreciative for this haore. And it's so quite, don't you ever, see that's the trouble, that students should make this mistake. Students should know that this posik is not to be translated that the first child should be named after the deceased. It means that the oldest brother, the Hoya of God goes to another brother, the oldest brother shall marry the woman Ashatelet who can bear. In other words, if she cannot bear, if she is an islandess, then the entire haloche of Yibam Mechalitz is not applicable. So if he the first, then Yochum Hashem Ochem means he takes over the entire Yerusha. If she's too old, if only because of nature she can't have the in other words, she was capable of having, then the law of Yibam Mechalitz is applicable. To an old woman, but I mean, she's probably close to 60.
All right. Now, I think we have covered enough as far as the Chalitza goes, unless you have any special shayla. Otherwise, we'll go in into Gittin. All right. Now, I will hand out some Gittin, and I have, I think, I have 15, I believe. And I want them naturally back. I took them out from the file. They are in the file. There's no special. Say the only thing you put in the word HaKohen, that's all. A Mekusha we don't have today, yes. Oh, that's what you meant. I get Mekusha, you meant. No, we don't have it today. Yeah, sure, but we don't do it. Okay, the Gemara describes how I get Mekusha. It's like two lines, bend it over, sew it, then back, sure. But we don't have it. Now, please, these are very important because these are documents taken out from files, and I have to put them back. Just a second. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I have 15, 11, 12, 30, 40, 50. Now, all right, you'll have to share two or three, one guest, and, okay.
Now, suppose, here's the Ichtigen. Let me write down the postic, and then we'll go through. What does it say here? Kirika, Isha, the Hoya, Im, Lo, Simsa, Heng, Beyonak, I just gave you the most important part. First, let me. The Rambam has 10 klolim, and I'd like to convey to you those 10 klolim. And he starts with this. And most things came to you. First, I'll put down an alpha, and then I'll go down. You know, is one. Chotav is Gimel, and La is Dalit, and then I'll go over the Sefer Kritzis with the A, the Notam, the Vav, the Yodah, the Zion, and the Shilchah, the Chet, and then he has to say two more on relationship, meaning, let's say, the Chotav and Notam. The Chotav and Notam. And then also he has creases benos on the yod. And that's what we say. Alright? Now I'll go over each part. Alright?
First we go over now the Yalkutis. First of all, I'm losim to chim b'yenov. Obviously, the pasuk emphasizes that it depends upon the man. Upon the man. In other words, he has to be the one. It has to be his rotzon hatov. It has to be with his consent. If he were to be forced, let's say if he loves her and he doesn't want to divorce her, then you can't obtain a divorce against his wishes. It has to be lo sim tzochein b'einav. He is the one who does the giving the gift. She is not. The pasuk doesn't emphasize her consent. So that's why min haTorah, a get could be given bal korcho. However, suppose you know all by now that there is a cherem Rabbeinu Gershon that no get bal korcho. So much so, this is such a serious cherem, far more than the cherem of polygamy. Because whenever we have a choice, whenever we have to forego, let's say, the Issa of polygamy, we have two choices. Either he should give her a get bal korcho, or we should give him permission to violate a cherem of Elohis of Isha Lishto. So we prefer the other cherem. A heter me rabbonim is Elohis of Isha Lishto. But a heter to be mata a cherem bal korcho, that we don't give. Because that cherem is worth, is very serious. All right? So, but biblically, it's only his rotzen that is important, not her rotzen. Now, the next item is dover. Now, dover primarily is dover mimomon, a takzer shove, which means that we need aided. And you probably remember, how many of you learned Gittin ever? Wonderful. All right. So you remember the machlokes between Edom and Sirikas. Edom is Sirikas. We pass like Reblozos. Edom is Sirikas. Edom is Sirikas. So the Dover Memomen that we learn that we need Edom, the Edom must be primarily at the Mesire. At the Ksivi we also have. We have Edom Hasima also. Now the Edom Hasima we do it Mishum Takoni. In case he will challenge the, he might argue that the get is forged. Yeah, so therefore, we have, and the Eidah Chassima won't be around. Eidah Messira won't be around. So with Eidah Chassima, we can always even compare with signatures, and we can finally ascertain the authenticity of the witness. I would like to say parenthetically, of course, I did emphasize that part to my class in connection with Kiddushin. The Eidah must be kosher Eidah. And especially by Get, we have to be so much more careful to make sure that the Eidah are kosher. What are the various psulim for Eidah? First of all, Eid Chomos, that says in the Torah. What is Eid Chomos? If anyone is in possession of unlawfully of something that doesn't belong to him, whichever way he obtained it, that person is considered an Eid Chomos, and he's supposed to lay it. And then the second part is the Torah calls Arosh, that pasuk in connection with Eidah. It says in Mishpatim. Anyway, the Torah uses the term Rosh, that no Rosh shall be an Eid. What is the meaning of a Rosh? What is the definition of a Rosh? So, in Makis, the Gemara has Chayvim Isis, and Chayvim Malkis. In other words, if it's Allah Sheim Malkis, then the person is not considered a Rosh. But a person who is over Allah Sheim Malkis, then he is a Rosh. Then he is a Rosh. And he is postulated. I remember on one occasion, it was in a case not of a Get, it was a case of Kiddushin, and they were looking for Eidim, for kosher Eidim, and they finally got some Shemri Shabbos. And then the rabbi was anxious to know whether they shave with a razor or with an elective. And I said, I shave with a razor. So naturally, that's five laven each time. You know, you have five laven. Not one, and each laugh is a laugh to Yishma Malkus, you understand? And someone made the remark, five laughs, I can live a year with five laughs. Each time, every day, to be over five laughs. What kind of annoyer do you have? And I might say, parenthetically, someone raised the question of Tama Mitzvah, the Rambam, you know that Rambam gives a Tama. That they used to, in the worship of idols, that was a part of the Avodah, that they had to shave with a razor. That's the Rambam's definition. That's the Rambam's reason why Bissar, otherwise without a Sa'at is permissible, why between his Parayim is Mutter and Bissar is also. So this is the Rambam's explanation. Yes. Alright, anyway, so I want you to know that the Kashrus of an Eid is very, there are other Psuladers. No, Eichel Bashuk is postulated. Eichel Bashuk, Why should Eichel Bashuk be postulated? Today, you know what Eichel Bashuk would be, let's say. See, in those days, they were very particular not to eat in the street. Today, you see people wherever you go, you see them chew, malagera, whatever they do. There is, I don't know whether today the Eichel Bashuk would be so serious a matter, but it seems in those days, the one who ate in the street demonstrated a total disregard for social mores, like a hippie today. He doesn't care whatever you think of him. Now, if a person doesn't care, then he is also cautious to testify falsely. He doesn't care, nothing is important. I want you to know, social mores is important because that underlines that a person has some responsibility, a feeling of responsibility. And if a person has no responsibility, doesn't care, then he's postulated. A koref naturally is postulated. You know, a koref, close relatives, cousins, you know, are postulated. Uncle, so much more so. All right, I mean, these are all, I don't exhaust all the possibilities. I want you to know that. Now, the next item, what is the next item? The kosa. All right, may I have your attention, please? The kosa law safely, the kosa. Because we know that we need, first of all, that we need a written document. Because, you know, normally there is a hekish, makash havaye liyitzias. Now, havaye has three ways. You know, bekesh b'shtar b'viyam. Now, and a yitzias is only b'shtar. Only b'shtar. That's the bekosav. The bekosav is the emphasis. Of course, you have it all sugis in kedushin and in gittin. Now, we have halachas in the kosav. I want you to know, like for example, a sefer Torah also has to be miktav. Do you ever hear the machlokes of chokteches, chokteches? If you learn gittin, you still remember. You definitely remember that. That's halacha, by the way, as far as sefer Torah also, tefillin mezuzis, and a get also. Now, for example, if the sofa writes, and then a little more ink than usual falls into to the letter, and there's a whole spot, you know. For example, he wants to write a final mem, and then there's one big ink spot. So you'll go and rub out the inside, and automatically it will become a final mem. That's possible. That's chokteh. So, and other things, in other words, once it loses its tzura of anos, and you are going to erase it in order to restore the tzura of the yos, then it's that choktochet, then it's not ksav. Ksav is our inyan. By the way, even the Gabi Shabbos, you know, I mean, of course, there's no question that it's also to erase anything, but it should be erasing, you know, is a one of the lamates melochot, mechiko, see? Now, when is it one of the lamates melochis? Almanos lichte. But if you rub out and it becomes automatically a note. If it's not a ksav, legab ksav, it's not ksav, and then it's not, it's legab mechike, it's not considered mechike eden. Only a mechik almanos lichte is chai. Now, we write with a quill, you know that. Why don't we write with a pen? Now, it seems that they used to have pens which scratched in the, you know, that would be a chakiko, which would also be a ksav by itself, but we need a ksav bidyoy. So therefore, there would be a ksav of gabik ksav. First, the chakiko, then there is a ksav, and ksav of gabik ksav, you know, is no good. So, or like he says, the mochak v'loi 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 mochak, another one points out, v'kosa v'loi mochak. So that's why we don't write with a pen. Although the truth of the matter is, we have such sensitive, you know, pens today. They're far more sensitive than the quills. But this is it. You see, this is where you get in already a minhag, and we only use a quill and we don't use anything else. We don't use a pen. Api aloha, there really shouldn't be any. You know, these the pens, you know, a fountain pen should be good if it's a sensitive fountain pen. But we don't use a fountain pen. We only use a quill. Only use a quill. All right. Now, in the aspect of writing, I would like you to know, it says because of he shall write. In other words, if a sofer writes, he writes it because he tells him to write. If a sofer should write without being told, that get is no get. That's it. Has to be lishmoy, lishmoy, lisham gerishin. But even that the lishmoy we get from law. But I'm saying besides the lishmo, suppose he writes lishmo, lishen gerishin. But if the husband didn't order him to write it, then he can't write it. Then because it says the kosav, he has to do the writing. All right, if the sofer writes it, it's as if he did it, provided he ordered him. But if he didn't order him, then it's a chesed in the kosav. The strange part is that today the minhag is that only a sofer writes. If he himself knows how to write, if he is a sofer, he'll get another sofer. If a chosav he should write, be a choshish, that after the get will already be completed, he might say that he, when he wrote it, atin zinigad shalom lishmo. This is a ma'akiv. Lishmo lishmo lishem gerish is a ma'akiv. So in order, we are afraid he might afterwards tell us that he wrote shalom lishmo, so the minhag is, unless it's impossible, he's the only sofer, and he wants to divorce his wife, there's no other sofer. In that case, he has to do it himself. But as much as possible, we don't let the husband do it himself. We have another sofer do it, for this reason. Now, do you remember the problem of Omer Imru? Do you remember the sugya Imru le sofer lichtev? Yeah. That's right, it's there that I find it. Now, the shaila is, does he have to order the sofer directly, or could he say to the bezin, you tell the sofer to write? It's a shaila. Now, I might inform you what a little innovation I did in our business. We have today, for example, I could get this is almost every week, every other week, I could get a call from one of our chaverim down Texas or in another far-flung city. There's no sofa, there's no one there. And a get has to be written, and if the get will not be written, then they will not come in to any large city where there is a bezin. That far they won't go. He could prevail upon them if the get could be written long distance. So what I introduce is, first of all, this already, the bezin in Israel already used it, that he orders biktav in the presence of a beis din. He says, I appoint plaintiff and plaintiff in that community, he should be the sofer, he should write a get. And the other two, A and B, should be Aiden, and C should be Ashaliah. You see, and that he writes it out, and he reads it before the bezin, and then they send it in to the bezin where there is the sofer and the Aiden, and they do it. And I added on, since there's a various machlokes where he has to talk directly, so I make him also call in, and I have the sofer and the Aiden on different extensions, and he directly, just as if he were in the same room. He directly orders the sofa, you sofa so-and-so, write again, and you sign it, and so on. So we have it from every angle. We have side the staff, and side the balfour, you know, and with this, and then we write again, and we naturally send them back. The Mesiras Aget shall be done by the rabbi. Now, the Mesiras Aget, of course, is also a very important aspect. I send it in with detailed instructions how it should be done, but very often I have little qualms, because again, you know, in a small community Israel, you can't find one sincere shema mitzvah, and you need to this is a get, you know, you gotta have kosher edim. And if you don't have kosher edim, the edim is here, no good, and what good is it all, the entire work is all in vain. So I suggested something, but unfortunately I don't have the rabbonim, you know, they're not wide awake enough to accept my suggestion. My suggestion is, pi aloche, just as he can make a shaliach aloche, why did he have to make a shaliach aloche? Because the first shaliach has to say before anichtem. If I'm going to say send it out there with that shaliach, he can't say before anichtem, before anichtem. So he must make a shaliach rishon in our office. And the shaliach rishon makes a shaliach sheni in the community where he is. And the shaliach sheni says shaliach beznani, and we could make a shaliach shlegefonot. And he hands over the get. So just as he can make a shaliach shlegefonot, a shaliach haloche, so could she make a shaliach kabbalah. So she could also, with the same trick, she could make a shaliach kabbalah in our office, and one shaliach should give to the other shaliach. Automatically she would be divorced. No, as yet, you know, I do not dare make any innovations, but if they would only pay attention a little to the problems we have today, I personally think they would go along with me, and I hope someday in the future we'll accomplish it. Have some other... Well, anyway. All right. Now, let's go on to the next item. The next item is Lo Lishmo. All right? What did you say? Is that the next item, Lishmo? Yeah. All right. Lo Lishmo, of course, in Tinder Torah says that it has to be Lishmo. In other words, for example, the Mishnah gives the example, even if the husband ordered the sofer to write and the Edom to chasmen to write a get for him, and he gave him his name and his wife's name, but he happens to have two wives and both have the same name, and he didn't make up his mind which one to divorce. So it's a chesson in lishmo. Lo lishmo, it has to be lishmo. And so then, of course it has to be lishmo and lishem gerishin. The inyan of lishmo lishem gerishin is a requirement. So the idea is today, for example, when a sofer starts to write, not only when he starts to write, even before, when he starts cutting up the paper and making the lines, you know, the preparation, he says, "Kol hatikunim shaniyose l'shem balam garish so and so, the garish v'asish to so and so, and so l'shmo l'shmo l'shem gerishin." And when he's finished with the tikunim and he starts writing, he repeats it again, and then he koisiv gedzel l'shmo l'shmo l'shem gerishin. Very important because of the l'shmo l'shmo. All right, the next item is Sefer Krisus. Now, Sefer Krisus means that we have some problems today, for example. We have problems today where after a civil divorce, you know, you can't force the other party to give a gift. While you're dealing, you know, with getting a civil divorce, you might prevail upon the other partner to cooperate with a get. Once the civil divorce is complete, then if one wants it, the other one is very spiteful. So I therefore always suggest every couple that before the civil divorce goes through, before you go to Mexico, before you go to the court, get a religious divorce. This is very important. Make sure. But there's another chisot. If they didn't clear all the claims and counterclaims, it's a chesson in krisus. It has to be krisus, you know. Everything is clear. So that's it. Well, that's why I demand that after both lawyers have already gotten them to sign and it's all clear, then, right after this is clear, the get should take place. Religious divorce is purely religious. Mm-hmm. And the state and religion are not to be mixed. No matter what we do, for example, I keep the documents, the Turim, you know, the Turim's Gerishin. I keep it on file, and I don't give it to either one of them, and I tell them, when you are done, when you have your civil divorce, please come in and I'll give you your document. The reason I don't give them the document, even though, by the way, I do stipulate in the document, that I write it in the document, but you never can tell, you know. Some lawyer once told me that there is somewhere a state law, although I asked a number of other lawyers, they don't remember that law. But I don't like to play I like to play safe. So one lawyer told me there is a certain state law that no one is allowed, in any capacity, you know, is allowed to declare a couple divorced if they're not divorced civilly. This is the law of the land. So why do I have to get in along with the state? I keep this documents on file until the civil divorce or the annulment goes through. Then I have them obtained. An annulment, by the way, is a very serious problem, because today, you see, a rabbi sometimes doesn't inquire before. All he does, he relies upon the license. He relies upon the license, and the license it says how many times married. So first of all, and how would it dissolve, you know? And if they say never married, so the rabbi feels he's fine. He's on the clear that he doesn't have to worry about eshetish, about get, nothing at all. First of all, I want you to know if either the man or the woman would prevaricate, in let's say misinform the clerk. You can't take him to court. You can't punish him. I'll take his ox alig. That's all. So you have it in against him. Nothing. That's all. That's first of all. And secondly, even if we are to take this statement for granted, do you know that when a person is considered annulled, a form of marriage is annulled, it is as if you were never married in the eyes of civil law. So even though it says in the license, never married, it doesn't necessarily mean that the person was never married. We have women with children who will tell you they were never married because they were annulled after the child was born. And within the 5 years, you know, they're now, they can annul us in New York. And there is need of a gear. Need of a guest, and it's very serious. These questions have to be clear. What? In civil law, if you find some kind of reason, we have, by the way, we have in Jewish law also annulment, but it's not so easy as it is in civil law. In Jewish law, if you can prove that they fooled you, I mean, if there was something very serious in which they were hiding, and then you find out. But primarily a disease, an internal disease or something, you could perhaps get an annulment. But in Jewish law, it's very difficult. It's only if you immediately react to it. If you remind yourself a year later, I mean, make a there is that concept. But it's very difficult. You know, in Jewish law, it's not so easy. If you would, let's say, immediately react, right after. I have cases, for example, I had a case with a girl, she got an annulment. She lived with her husband 10 months, and she got an annulment. And the reason she got an annulment was he was impotent. Now, and she proved it, she claimed she proved it in court. A doctor investigated, and he testified that she was still a virgin. We have a problem. He refuses to cooperate with a guilt. Now, the shaila is, I asked her, how come you stayed with him 10 months? You see, if she would come immediately right after, in that you know immediately. You know right away. Why didn't you react immediately? This is a concept of annulment. I mean, after all, the entire idea of marriage is defeated. If she would react immediately, but she didn't react 10 months later. And anyway, in this particular case, we prevailed upon him to give her a gift. But if he wouldn't, then we have a problem in our hands. Lately, you know, we have already came up, you know, had already the second case where the woman claims she obtained already a civil divorce on the basis that her husband is a homosexual. This is something which we couldn't conceive among Jews that such a perversion should exist. And this is, alas, this is very sad. What did it say? Can you hear it? That's Mishkel Chuasa. He's a Mishir Mises. What you mean, the Torah said? The Torah mentions all, but I mean, of course, the Torah has everything, all the laws. There are many laws that the Hoivel and Ivro, I mean, in Sodom and others, you know, yeah, and the Dahas according to some, I mean, in Jewish life, to hear of a homosexual is so abnormal. So today, the trouble is that it's become normalized. And when you read the papers, I mean, they demand equal rights. And it's such an abnormal phenomenon that, and it's if I'm not mistaken, a few months ago, I came across a news item where a Catholic priest performed a sanctioned it. And I saw that a number of weeks ago. Telling you, this is such a perversion of religion. I mean, after all, when the Torah says, I mean, at least, I don't know to what extent the Old Testament was so totally negated. I mean, even civilized countries have accepted this norm, and to go and sanction it religiously. Well, now go on to the next item. Of course, there are various here. For example, in Christus, we are the word Christus. Now, I don't know how many of you ever witnessed a Mesiris Haggad. Yeah, no. I'll tell you, Mesiris Haggad. We tell the woman to hold her hands and not to close it. We want, you see, the din is, for example, first of all, that is a little later, the Nosan, Velokho. He has to give it to her, she mustn't take it. Now, usually, she holds the hands and takes it, and it's no good. He has to give it to her. That is a whole din. Remember the Sugi in Gittin, if the get is tied with Meshicha. Now, if he could still pull it to himself, then there's a chesson increases. Chesson increases. In other words, there must be a total detachment. There is also conditional gittin. You know, some people like to make conditions. Now, this is the reason why we really are very makpid, and we don't. We're trying to cut out all conditions. I have cases, for example, where a person doesn't want to give the get before the civil divorce is completed. But we want to protect her just in case afterwards. But he insists one thing: he wants the civil divorce to be first, and the other one she wants Nasha to be protected. So finally, when I can't help it, so I say this: all right, you give the get to a shaliach, and you take my word that the shaliach will not give it to her until after the civil divorce goes through. But I have to explain to him, please, I want you to know, this is no condition. You have to rely solely upon me, because I have to explain to him, we mustn't have any condition attached to this. If he is going to give the get only out now, that the get shall not, the mesida shall not be before a certain time, then there's already a t'nai. Although an halachi, a t'nai could be made, but when the t'nai by the mesira, not by the ksiva, before the shah ksiva there must be no t'nai at all. But we go further yet, and we absolutely cut out all t'nai. Now what I try to explain to the man, I want you to know that if and when, let's say, if the get should be given to her before the time, I want you to know the get will be valid. I will be the scoundrel. But the get will be valid, and I have to emphasize it, and please just rely upon me as a gentleman that I will not violate the trust. And we have to emphasize no t'naim and get and yit, because a t'nai is a chesson increases. See? Chesson increases. Now it says sefer kris, it doesn't say bisefer. You remember that part in the Gemara, if it would say bisefer, since it doesn't say that way, so sefer means sefer devoted. In other words, when api aloche, it could be written ala ola shel zayin, al keren shel por. Remember that? Could be written on anything. However, we write it not on cloth. Sefer would mean cloth, but we write it on paper. The word sefer means sefer devoted. Now the shaila is, what is the sefer devoted? What do you tell in the get? What is the content of the get? So here is the get. Let's suppose we go over that get. Would you like to follow it? First you have the date. The date. Zman, by the way, in our Torah, there's no need of Zman. But why Tiknu Zman? Do you remember? Shemichapal Batach Brisa? Or? Very good. All right. So we have this Zman. Originally, if you remember your Gemara, what was the chronology they used? They didn't use Bria Solo. It's a Lucidian era they used. Storis, when you started. That's the Seleucidian era from Seleucid. You remember the first general after Alexander the Great, they broke up and
yeah.
That you find all throughout in the Geonim, you find that era all throughout. In a Shri Dagon, a Geras of Shri Dagon, all the dates he gives you is the dates after this era. Anyway, we use Bria Solo. Now, in the city, we have to mokem is also a takone, and not only the takone of the mokem, but we even define, since there may be two mekomis with the same name, so we define by rivers. Yes. Is that the name? What?
Spelling.
Now with spelling, we come. That's an inyan which I would like to discuss. Let's see, how late can we stay in? Let me hear. Spelling till 10. I think the spelling is very important. Suppose I better dwell a little on spelling. And the rest, if you learn Hebrew, then you probably remember all the others. I should say this much. In the beginning of the Rambam, you find all these 10 enumerated and explained. Yeah. Where's the, let me give you a little idea on spelling. All right. Now, in spelling, what we adopted today, of course, the Hebrew name for Egypt is spelled. The question is the transliteration of non-Hebrew names to in the Hebrew letters. Now, we have a rule, that's the Aramaic rule, and we follow it in Yiddish and in English, and any non-Hebrew name, non-Jewish name, that we translated into, transliterated, that at the end, instead, we use an aleph. In Hebrew, we use a hey, Sora, Voda, Rivka, you know, in Yiddish, Fege is an aleph at the end. Now, about the A, the yud, you know, in Hebrew has three pronunciations. It has a chirik, it has a tere, a kenu, a kevesenu, you know, you have one yud, and it also a segum, a lekecho, you know, it's also a yud could stand for one dot, for two dots, for three dots, you know, chirik and tere and segum. Now, we adopted that both chirik and tere, one yud. When do we use two yudin? When they call it a pasacharis. I mean, that's the terminology they use in the Yidden literature. What is a pasacharis? You have, for example, a Yiddish name like Breiner. It's not Breiner, it's Breiner. What do you say? I. Yeah. Well, now this is a little difficult. I don't know why. Because Galatiana, for example, would say Feige. They would say Feige, they would say just like Breiner. And yet they spell, somehow there is a little distinction. But then there would be an aleph already. That would be aleph. Yeah, but no, even the Polish and the Galiciana, see, the Polish and Galiciana, they told me, we have a Galiciana Rabbonim in our business, and they told me somehow, I can't hear the distinction, but the Galiciana himself feels a distinction between Feige and Brian. Somehow Brian is more emphasized than Feige. Yeah. So even I'm not talking about Brian, it's already the Olive, already. Listen here. The Rav Henke, for example, has a long discussion. You can have three letters to indicate one sound. Because it would mean desage. In that case, why two letters can be used? Then you can make the same mistake with two letters. And another thing, you see, somehow, and it's very strange because Rav Henke made a study of Gittin, of these names, and of tremendous. He made a somehow he can't hear the difference between Z and J. Dalet Zayin is Z. Dalet Zayin Shin is J. And you say George, you don't say Zord. I can tell you this much. Yes.
In Israel, I did it right in
Yeah, yeah, in Israel, yes. We have even Gitan, yeah. We have Gitan. In Israel, I want you to defend whether the Ashkenazim write it or the Aspirin. And I wish we would have, we would adopt the same script. The strange part is, we had already a get from Israel, from Aspirin and Bezin, and for G, they write a Gimel and a Dat on top. They write a Gimel and a Dat on top, yeah. But we, the Ashkenazim, didn't adopt that spelling. I can't help it, but this is it. No, Ashkenazim, in the book, but not in Gittin. I'm talking about Gittin. In books, yes. In books, you'll find a Gimel and a George. You'll find a Gimel and a apostrophe. Now, you have, for example, I have an older Rav sent me a gift. This is, by the way, my contribution to the older Rabbonim here in New York. They finally came to my conclusion that I'm right. They used to write Joseph. They used to write Palestine, either Wereshin or Rashkin, that depends for me upon me. This is the way they wrote Joseph. And I claim there must be a book. What happened was this. In Europe, they come from Europe. In Europe, you know, the German pronunciation is Joseph. Joseph. See? Joseph. Now, Joseph, but here we don't say Joseph, we say Joseph. The strange part is this, when they have to write Joe, you know, we have Joe a name, they all write Dalla Zanshin Alavov. I mean, the Alavov. I'm primarily now interested in the Alavov. They write Alavov. It comes to write Joseph, they leave out the book. Why don't you pronounce it Joseph? They don't hear. So I tell another little. No, you're Joseph. You can't hear the difference between Joseph and Joseph. See, that's it. We have difficulties in transliteration. But now, at least in New York, they adapted it. Outside of New York, I still have Elder Yarbonne from Detroit, from other places. Yes. Well, we decided that the K count, we always use Kuf. Because Achov, that would be already a Chit. So in order not to make a mistake between a Degusha, you know, from Degusha and Shreina Degusha. So Achov is Chit, and a Kuf is Kid. Now, Shal, we would write this way. Now here, another thing, which I have argument. They write with a Samach. I claim it should be with a Zion. Because in English, every word that has an S at the end, it sounds as a Z sound. It's Chal. It's not Chal. That I can't prevail. So with some of them, I finally told them, this is a rule in English, that an S at the end, you say his book. Or sometimes, you see, you may have Louis and Louis. What is that? Boy, same thing. I mean, the same thing. According to the only thing is, as far as this is concerned, most people, they say Charles, because in English it's with an S, they immediately go in with a Sam. But really, it should be a Zion. I mean, that's my. Yeah. Two books, unfortunately. We can't help it. And for a TH, we have to use a test. At least that's the way they. I want you to know, we follow a certain spelling which they established a century ago, you know, the early, in the end of the last century. They start to this very day, you know how they spell New York in Laget? Nun Bob Al. This is the way they spell New York. We will not change it. We are stuck with that New York. We will not go, that Arab is totally insufferable. What? Well, that would be much better. New. But apparently the early Rav Gordon was a great Rav who wrote a lot on Gittin and the transliteration. This is it. You know, they didn't hear. Yes, what? A little louder. TH, unfortunately, we have to see test. This is the way they gave it. It's very, very, it's wrong, but we can't help it. Yes? See, Theodore, for example, another thing. See, in Europe, they do say Theodore. In other words, the TH does not sound like C. like here. But this is it, you know, yeah. This is a lot of halachas. When do we do the Hebrew name first? When do we do, sometimes we say Amchunen, sometimes we say the Mitzkere, other the Mitzkariye. There are a lot of halachas. The Rav wanted to, that's what we are tremendous takonis. But finally the Rav changed his mind, because the Rav says that our milk is not to put in the family name. Yeah. The halacha is, there's halacha if the Snei is Ben Shimon, so you have to give a simon. What better simon do you have if you give a family name? And that's why, so large a metropolis, you certainly put. So originally, when the RCA, the Medical Council, wanted to establish the Beis Din, so the Rav at that time said, we make this takon and put in the. But as far as Gittin, he didn't, but as far as Ksubis, so I mentioned it to the committee. Did you ever see the RCA Ksubis?
Yes.
And I said that Rav said that we should put it in, and we have it in the Mishpacha, you know, for this reason. Now, we, of course, in Gittin we have a lot more to cover, but it is 10 o'clock, and in my class, right from the beginning to the end as you see it. Please, all the Gittin must come back, because I have to put them back in the fire. Cut it.